Blog Talk Radio.
In these days of tea parties and constitution rallies, we're all looking back to our founding fathers for a little bit of wisdom. Samuel Adams said, "It does not take a majority to prevail, but rather an irate, tireless minority, keen on setting the brush fires of freedom in the hearts of men." This is the voice of an irate, tireless minority of one. We'll be talking about politics, religion, and doing what's right. And you can call me Mom.
You're lost, you don't know where you are, you're all alone. You're in the dark and you don't know where to find the light.
Politics, religion, and doing what's right, except today I'm probably going to talk more about relationships and money, because I can. This is your guest host, Thomas Pybel. Mom is still recovering from her surgery. As always, your prayers are appreciated. I know I'm very happy. I'm sure there's many other people who are very happy that she's doing well and seems to be recovering well. Hello, Red Fox Radio in the chat room. I didn't quite get through everything that I wanted to talk about last week. I was talking a lot about relationships, and I might just throw in a couple more thoughts on that. Before we get there, Mom gave me an update when I got here to do the show about the situation with Lavoy Finicum, or Finicum, I'm not sure how you pronounce his name. He was the victim of the FBI in the Bundy standoff in Oregon recently. Apparently there was a press conference. This is just the synopsis I got, so don't take any of what I say right now as gospel, please. I don't know anything. just assume I don't know what I'm talking about. But the synopsis that I got from Mom is that there was a press conference with the FBI, and they said, "We've investigated, and apparently we didn't do anything wrong." And then somebody released a video that shows that Lavoy was shot at before he even got out of his car. They started shooting. He got out of the car with his hands up. He was unarmed. They kept shooting. And then after he fell to the ground dead, they kept shooting. That's what was revealed on the video. It'll be interesting to see where that goes. I'm sure that Mom will talk about that in more depth when she returns. And I was scrolling through my Facebook feed just now before the show started. I found something really interesting. There's this commercial that I guess has been going around from the 1960s, a presidential election in the 1960s. I'd like to try and play some of it for you. I don't know how good the audio is going to be because I'm just holding the phone up to a speaker, but let's give this a shot.
They don't feel guilty about being a Republican. I've always been a Republican. My father is, his father was. The whole family is a Republican family.
And they have a screen here that says, "Confessions of a Republican" was a campaign ad that aired during the 1964 presidential election.
I voted for Dwight Eisenhower the first time I ever voted. I voted for Nixon the last time. But when we come to Senator Goldwater, now it seems to me we're up against a very different kind of a man. This man scares me. Now, maybe I'm wrong. A friend of mine has said to me, "Listen, just because a man sounds a little irresponsible during a campaign doesn't mean he's going to act irresponsibly. You know that theory that the White House makes the man. I don't buy that. Sometimes I wish I'd been at that convention in San Francisco. I mean, I wish I'd been a delegate. I really do, because I would have fought, you know? And I wouldn't have worried so much about party unity, because if you unite behind a man you don't believe in, it's a lie. I mean, when the head of the Ku Klux Klan, when all these weird groups come out in favor of the candidate of my party, either they're not Republicans or I'm not. I thought about just not voting in this election, just staying home, but you can't do that because that's saying you don't care who wins, and I do care. I think my party made a bad mistake in San Francisco, and I'm going to have to vote against that mistake on the 3rd of November.
Vote for President Johnson on November 3rd. The stakes are too high for you to stay home.
So that was an ad campaign that ran during the 1960s. There's one moment that stood out to me in that commercial, if you could hear it. I don't worry about so much about party unity, because if you unite behind a man you don't believe in, it's a lie. I don't know if you've listened to as much talk radio as I have and heard the talk about circular firing squads and the conservative movement and conservatives and the Republicans tearing themselves apart, and there's a civil war breaking out in the conservative movement. If you unite behind a man you don't believe in, it's a lie. I wish people could get that through their heads. And I'm not saying in this capacity, although I've made my feelings clear how I feel about Donald Trump, which is obviously why this clip is getting so much circulation, that I don't personally feel comfortable voting for him. But I'm not saying, by playing this clip and pointing this out, anything about who you should or should not vote for. Simply that if you unite behind a man you don't believe in, it's a lie. I wish everybody could get that through their heads in this country. That would be great. That aside, I was talking about relationships on the last show, and I've been thinking about it over the last week. I think this is a really important point. The reason that I'm bringing it up on the show is just to talk about my advice, and based on my experiences and knowledge that I've accumulated over my incredibly short life. But it really is an important point. As I said at the end of the last show, you want to fix the government, you have to fix the church. If you want to fix the church, you have to fix the family. If you want to fix the family, you have to fix marriage. Quite frankly, my advice to anyone and everyone would be, don't sleep with people you're not married to, and date a whole lot of people when you're young, which sounds, it might sound a little out there to evangelical ears or to a conservative Christian audience. I really think that our kids aren't being taught how to date properly, and it's one of the keys to getting our culture back. So if you have kids of your own, or if you're somebody who's dating, or kids that want your advice, any sphere of influence that you have over the next generation, they need to learn how this works, because they're not getting it other places. They need to know, you need to date a lot of different people, and don't go out with the same person more than once. At first, at least. If you see somebody a bunch of times and you want to go steady, that's a different matter. But at first, you just need to be okay with yourself and make a lot of friends. Date multiple people and don't mess around with them. If we could get that right, it would have a huge impact on our culture. Huge. I've heard statistics that say something like, and this is including Christian people and non-Christian people, among across the board, people who do not sleep together before they get married have a divorce rate of something like 5%. That one thing alone, if we could fix it, would have a huge impact. But get the next generation to do this right, and it'll have a profoundly deep impact. I just think it's so important. The other thing I want to talk about today is a lot about money. I may have brought it up on the show before, actually. I'm not sure. But I want you to think about what money is, if you don't know already. I mean, what is it, really? I had an economics professor in college who was really, really good. And she really knew her stuff. I found her name at the back of my textbook as somebody who had reviewed it. She knew what she was talking about, and she got it, too. What is money, really? Money is whatever people in any given time and place decide it is. There are stories about some places in inner cities where laundry detergent has become money. And in fact, standard size, I'm not sure what the standard size is, but there's like a 1 gallon thing of laundry detergent, I guess, a 1 gallon container, has become the equivalent of a certain dollar amount that a lot of people know. This much laundry detergent equals $20 or whatever it is or was. And really, in a sense, the laundry detergent becomes money because you could exchange it for anything you want. Money is really just a medium of exchange. It's not a Federal Reserve note. It's not necessarily gold or silver or any particular thing. Anything can become money. And that's a really profound idea when you start to wrap your head around it. When you think about the things that Jesus taught about the things of this world, if you remember the parable of the lilies of the field and how they want for nothing, God supplies them with everything they need. They don't worry about the next day, right? What is he talking about? He's talking about like all the stuff you need. You need clothes and food and shoes, all those things. And he says, don't worry about them. Well, that sounds nice. How many people really apply that? And what is he really saying? I mean, in a sense, if anything can be money, is he talking about just stuff? Or is he talking about money as well? What is money? When you get that concept into your head, it's important to understand money is not the pieces of paper in your wallet. Money is anything that we decide it is. I was exposed to a lot of that thought and a lot of the thoughts I want to share with you today quickly. When I was in college and a little bit before, during the summers, I would spend hours. I read books and listened to speeches by, actually, Donald Trump was one of the people I listened to a lot. Quite frankly, I've learned a lot from him. As opposed as I am to him being the president, there's a lot to learn from his materials that's very insightful. But I also listen to Robert Kiyosaki. He has a lot of great materials. I highly recommend checking out his book, Rich Dad, Poor Dad. You know, there's a list of books in my head that I would recommend that are like the top five books that you have to read before you die at some point, or that you should read now to make your life really, really a lot better than it is. And that would be one of them. Rich Dad, Poor Dad. It's an excellent book. He talks about not only what money is, but how to make money, how to make money work for you. And he also talks about the power of money and how important it is that you control your money rather than letting it control you. It's very important that we keep money in perspective in our lives, that we don't let it control our decisions. Our decisions have to be based on the things that will last rather than things that will perish. That being said, quick concept that I want to throw at you, the difference between assets and liabilities. You remember the financial meltdown of 2008? And they said the problem was all these banks were giving out loans to bad debtors or creditors. I'm not sure which term is more accurately applied. People who wanted the money, they weren't solid. They weren't going to pay it back. They made a bunch of bad loans, right? A bunch of people that shouldn't have been borrowing money. Well, a lot of financial experts would have justified it by saying, well, a house is an asset. We can give them money to buy a house because a house is an asset and it'll somehow appreciate over time and generate money. The problem is, a house is not an asset. There are technical definitions that you may find in an economics textbook or a dictionary that will tell you what an asset is, but they're often very confusing and they're different than what I'm going to tell you that it is, okay? I want you to know that up front. I'm telling you something different than what the dictionary says. But this is Thomas's ramblings and Thomas's advice right here, okay? An asset is something that puts money into your pocket. A liability is something that takes money out of your pocket. And if you believe that your house is an asset, I want you to think about how much money your house has put into your pocket, if you have a house. If you don't have a house, just follow the thought experiment with me. How much money would a house put into your pocket? Do you actually get money from your house? Does it generate any money for you? You have to say, well, you know, I'm paying a mortgage. That takes money out of my pocket. But the standard argument would be, you know, if I ever sell the house, then I get all of that value back that I poured into the house. Okay, well, but you paid off that money into the mortgage that you're getting back when you sell the house. Where did that money come from? That came from you. It's money that you would have had if you just saved it anyway. And a house is a pretty terrible investment vehicle. I mean, you know how many repairs it needs over time and how much can go wrong? The property taxes on houses, and don't get me started on property taxes, but the property taxes and the fact that everything in the world decays and breaks down over time. A house is not a great investment vehicle if you're expecting to, you know, get more money back. Now, you could say, well, I could sell the house for more than I bought it for, and then I would get money back. Okay, but did that really generate anything? Did that generate any wealth? I suppose There's a decent, logically sound, convoluted argument that because somebody else values the house more than you do, then technically it created value. Okay, I guess. But it's still a pretty risky proposition. I mean, if you're going to talk about investing your money in something, if you ever watch Shark Tank, people who do venture capital who invest in things, they're looking to minimize their risk, right? So buying something that you're hoping you can just flip, that you can just sell for more than you bought it for, that's pretty risky. You have no guarantee that you're going to be able to do that. For all you know, you might actually get less back than you paid for it, which would make sense since the house is like decaying and breaking down over time and getting worse. unless you do a whole lot of maintenance to keep it up. And then, I mean, just talk about all the other stuff that the house needs. I mean, if it needs repairs, if you want to do any remodeling or renovation, you know, landscaping, you have to fix plumbing from time to time, you have to fix wiring and electronics. There's all sorts of expenses that come into owning a house. How much money is a house putting into your pocket? Can you call it an asset? No, it's not an asset. What would an asset be? Assets break down into basically four categories. There are paper assets, which is like stocks and bonds and mutual funds. There's commodities, which is physical, actual things that you can buy, like gold and silver, that supposedly will hold some value. There's businesses, because if you have a good business, it puts money in your pocket, right? If you own a business, especially a big business, and you know what the sign that you have a big business is? The sign that you have a big business is that you can leave it alone for at least 6 months and everything runs fine without you. Well, that's also the sign that you have a good business. It means you have such a solid business model, you have such solid employees, that everything just keeps going, and it's like a faucet of money that you can just turn on and walk away from. That is a terrific asset. So a business can be an asset. Even though it can suck up a lot of your time and energy and your money, it can be an asset because it puts money into your pocket. So there's businesses, there's paper assets, stocks and bonds, there's commodities, and then there's real estate. Now, why would you say real estate? You just spent like 5 minutes telling us why a house is an asset, right? Well, your house is not an asset, your own personal residence, because it doesn't put money in your pocket. How could you get real estate to put money in your pocket, make somebody else pay it, right? You know, I've met with a couple of landlords, and this is something that I do research on that I would like to invest in someday is real estate. And if you own a house that somebody else lives in and they pay you rent to live there, well, then it's paying for itself. And if you set the rent in the right place, you can actually turn a profit, right? And then your house goes from being a liability to an asset because somebody else is paying the rent and it's just money coming in. Yeah, you have to fix the objections that I always get to this idea is, well, I don't want to spend all my time fixing broken toilets. Okay, well, I mean, I'm sure Donald Trump spends a lot of time fixing broken toilets. You think that's what he does? You think that's what occupies his time in his real estate empire? Is, well, he's responsible personally for fixing all of the broken toilets. And furthermore, you know, even if Donald Trump was personally responsible for fixing a broken toilet, does he seem like the kind of person who would say, "Oh, I don't want to do that much work. I guess I'll just stop doing this. I'll just go home." Or would he just go and fix the toilet? There's so many things in life that aren't nearly as hard as you may think they are once you know how to do them. I mean, if you that's actually a point worth bringing up. If you really want to be a wealthy person in the first place, if you want any of what I'm talking about right now to be useful to you, it's going to be important that you have the right attitude, the attitude of, well, I'm not afraid to work hard. I'm not afraid to, you know, get in there and get my hands dirty and go and get it. There's another concept that I want to throw at you, which comes from Robert Kiyosaki in his book. He talks about four quadrants. I believe he calls it the cash flow quadrant. But he talks about the different ways that people acquire money. And there are four, basically four different ways. You're either an employee, you are self-employed, or you have a small business. So it's sort of the same thing as being, maybe you have a few employees, self-employed, same category. You are a big business owner, or you are an investor. Those are basically the four ways that people make money. And what a lot of people don't realize is that the employee category, where most people are, and the category, by the way, that our schools train people to fall into, and if you don't believe me, just go to a school. Go to a college. I'm not talking about just K through 12 public sponsored any school in America. Go any level of school and ask them what their goals are, ask them what they're trying to prepare the kids for, and I can almost guarantee you somewhere you'll hear the word job. You'll hear, we want to prepare them for a career. We're giving them skills so they can go out and get a good job. There was a whole full-time job created for somebody at my college to just talk to students about their resume and where they can look for jobs and how to find jobs. The whole system is designed to program children from kindergarten through adulthood through college to go and find a job. And if you don't believe me, seriously, just look at some promotional materials for a school sometime. Go online. It's crystal clear what they're being programmed for. Anyway, point is, if you're in the employee category, you're actually one of the most highly taxed money makers in the system. A lot of people don't realize that. And the reason is because they don't personally see all of the taxes. For one thing, most employers will withhold your taxes before you even see the money. You get used to seeing a certain amount on your paycheck, and you don't pay attention to how much is actually coming out. But even if you do pay attention and you realize how much of your money they're taking away, you don't see the taxes that your employer gets, because your employer is taxed for having a business, for employing you before you get taxed for the money that you make from your employer. There's all sorts of taxes on your employer that come into play before your employer has the money to pay you. Usually employers need to have about three times as much money as you actually make before taxes in order to pay you the money that you're making. So employees get taxed up the wazoo, and that's where most people fall. So if you want to be a wealthy person, don't count on getting there by being an employee. Now, there are some highly specialized fields, people that make a whole lot of money, just insane amounts, because they're highly specialized and they have this very technical knowledge that nobody else has, or they can do something nobody else can do. But I mean maximum. If you're going to be the best in the world at something, or at least the best in the country, in that scenario, even if you're self-employed, if you're doing some kind of specialized trade, you're looking at like $500,000 a year, max. That's like the best that you could hope for in that quadrant. However, if you want to build a large business and use a capitalist system, if you want to be an investor, you can make a whole lot more money, and it's worth doing research and the time to learn about investing and to learn about business, to learn if you want to be wealthy, which, by the way, is not a bad thing. This will be my final thought for today, I suppose, because I have 1 minute left. But I was reading Daniel Lappin's book last night, Thou Shall Prosper, and he talks about it's not a bad thing to want to have money. The more people there are in the world that want money, the more people there are that will do things for me. I get out of bed, and the newspaper has been delivered to my door. Somebody has already mashed up all of the grain and turned it into flour and baked my bread for me. They've made my toothpaste and my shampoo. They've crafted the silverware. All I had to do was go out and buy it. A whole lot of the work that goes into making my life better has already been done because there's somebody out there in the world who wants to make money. So it's not necessarily a bad thing. I may come back with more thoughts. I may not. If I don't, it was a lot of fun. We are all an irate, tireless minority of one. We can all make a difference, and we're all supposed to. Thanks.